10 o'clock on the dot.
Is it? Hello, everybody. Welcome to our awesome, awesome panel titled Life After Death. I am Matt, also known as Joe Magician. Why don't we go on the line and introduce ourselves?
Hi, I'm Robert, also known as Indie Geek.
Hello, my sweet summer children.
Great area. How are you guys?
And I'm Walda, known on the internet as Fat Walda.
One of my... One of the awesome fellow moderators of the Song of Ice and Fire board.
Right.
So don't leave that out. We will ban every one of you. If we can get your usernames now so we can just make this faster, just ban everybody. That'd be nice. Thank you. So the point of this panel, we want to talk about resurrection, characters that have come back from the dead, undeath. Oh, thank you, Greg. I forgot what I wrote. here we go. The people of Westeros just cannot stay dead. From Beric Dondarrion, Jon Snow, Catelyn Stark, Gregor Clegane. Like, what's going on with them? The different kinds of whites, the different kinds of undeath. Why do they keep coming back then? Like, why did George put this in? Because it's kind of an odd thing to play. He's already got dragons. He's already got his ice things and the ice whites. But also, like, yeah, what's going on with that?
Okay. So, what's going on with it? I think we could talk about, we could start with saying who our favorite.
Oh.
Because we can't just say what's going on with it as in one answer. We can go, who is your favorite person and why that's been brought back to from the dead?
Sure. My favorite is probably Lady Stoneheart. It's such a different way to look at her. And when you see the change from her before and after the Red Wedding, it's so dramatic in the way that, especially just how brutal she becomes and how Kat is, well, Grey thinks very differently about that, but she's not that way beforehand. And like the subtle change as she slits Jingle Bells, her Walder Frey's wife. I would say that was my favorite undead character. What are you, Robert?
I don't know if I've got a favorite undead character. I mean, I'm going to talk about Zombie Mountain in a bit.
Shocker.
I know. Love it. Qyburn was right. You heard it here first. I think Beric Dondarrion, though, out of the characters, we get so much more of an understanding from him about how this whole thing operates, because we can almost hear his thoughts about what he feels, what he's lost, what he's like now compared to what he was then. And I think that character, we learn huge amounts about what this whole life and death thing is. I do have thoughts about why it's in there. George R. R. Martin put it in there, but we'll come back to it.
Okay.
Mine is Bloodraven.
You
don't really think of Bloodraven as, oh, he died and then he was brought back. You kind of think of him as, he should be dead, but he's not. Why is he still alive? And it's my belief the Weirwoods are extending his life. And so, yeah, Bloodraven.
Since Matt already took mine, Lady Stoneheart is my favorite. No, really, I had George sign the Lady Stoneheart epilogue in A Storm of Swords when we were at Balticon a few years ago, and he kind of gave me a side eye. He's like, why? And I was like, well, I want to see her get her vengeance. Like, I'm really excited about that. And he looked at my husband, and he's like, you got to watch out for her. So since I can't say Lady Stoneheart, the thing, I'm glad we're talking about why this is in the story, because I feel like there's an unresolved thing with Craster's sons. Mm. And we see in the show that the whites are taking them and they're turning them into something, and we don't know what, and the show never told us, and hopefully the books will give us some kind of clue as to what exactly they're doing with these babies.
You didn't think the touching the face was super clear and explained everything?
But where are the babies?
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, they weren't in the battle.
Oh, that's right. Do they have, like, is there like a high school?
There's some kind of white old man up in the north taking care of all of these babies.
Waiting. Walker daycare.
Right, yeah.
Getting ice pimples and all that fun stuff.
It's a Disney sitcom right there.
I mean, that should be one of the spinoffs. Yeah, White Walker definitely. Kindergarten. That'd be pretty awesome.
It's like Rugrats. With ice zombies.
One example that it's not my original thing. I don't remember who said it, but they were saying that in the books they believe that the soul and actual life energy of the babies is transferred into, like, something made of ice, like something a solid state just made of ice, and that soul energy force then animates this ice. So it's not actually the baby's physical body. Somewhere there's a pile of baby bodies.
That sounds. I'm sorry. I came to the image.
Welcome to Gonna Throw Us.
Pile of baby bodies.
If that makes you feel bad in the show, of course, like they don't show that, right? Like no. the babies are still sort of
babies.
Yeah. Afterwards.
They have like a super growth hormone. The touch. Sorry, my bad.
Can I talk briefly about this? What I think is the literary thing George R. R. Martin's doing here with the living and unliving and all the rest of it.
Hello.
So on the show, they presented this very much as this is the living versus the dead. That was the way they kept on coming back to it. John was doing it really ironic when John and Beric were saying, we're fighting on the side of the living against the dead. But... that's not where George R. R. Martin thematically, I think, is taking the books. That is about ice and fire being opposing forces. So having the dead also on the side of the living against ice and fire, I think he's just underlining the fact that this isn't a matter of just the good guys who happen to be alive against the bad guys who happen to be dead. It's a lot more complicated and multi-layered. So I think that is part of what's going on here, is that he's trying to show us that the people we might cheer on are not always completely pure and good. And that is right across everything that he's written about. So I think, for me, that's the literary reason why he's doing it.
Mm. There's also the idea that the fire whites and ice whites, it doesn't matter which side of this war that you're on.
Yeah.
Everyone has access to the same thing. It's not the undeath is evil. It's how you're using it, which is pretty typical of him, I would say.
Exactly. And the science whites.
The science whites, that's right.
Do we want to run down like the different types?
Sure. Oh.
Does that mean I get to
yeah.
do that?
Okay. You clearly know what the different types are.
Yeah.
So obviously ice zombies, big motif in the show and the books.
I'm so sorry.
So there's something going on with that. We see white walkers, zombie bears, deer, things like that. We also get people like Benjen, I mean Cold Hands, who is... we don't know if he's related to ice or if he's related to something with the Children of the Forest, right? Or if that's related at all. We have like Fire Whites, so the people who have been brought back via the Lord of Light or Valor. Beric or Lady Stoneheart or John or even possibly Melisandre herself, or whether her life is being extended like sort of in parallel to Blood Raven. I see Cold Hands as his own category on the thing, so that sort of falls under. If he's not ice, then he's sort of green, Children of the Forest, trees, weirwood, right, falling in with Blood Raven, and whatever is going on there. Presumably, John is a fire white. I mean, John, like George has said, John is a fire white.
Yeah,
he said Barathon explicitly Darian said,
and everyone lost their
right,
lost their mind,
except on the show where they didn't seem to care at all. And then you have I'll throw this in here before science whites. The drowned god possibly is bringing people back. I mean, that's sort of part of the mythos of the Ironborn religion, is that they are going into the ocean and they are drowning and they are being brought back. Is that literal? Well, it could be in some cases, possibly Patchface or others. And then you have the science whites, who are something to do with maesters, dark magic, electricity, we don't know, right? Like,
Robert knows.
I do. And I'm going high tech because I had to take a picture of my laptop to get a quote because I couldn't get the technology to work. But so the Qyburn thing I was sort of talking about a moment ago is Qyburn is, I think, one of the only people who's been trying to figure out from a scientific perspective what all of this is that's been going on. And there's this section when he talks to, or Jamie was talking to him, and Jamie says, do you believe in ghosts? And Qyburn says, once at the Citadel, I came into an empty room and I saw an empty chair. Yet I knew a woman had been there only a moment before. The cushion was dented where she'd sat, the cloth was still warm, and her scent lingered in the air. If we leave our smells behind us when we leave a room, surely something of our souls must remain when we leave this life. So that is his theory, that something lingers of the soul after death. And we kind of see that across the piece when you get like Lady Stoneheart, mm-hmm. something of her has lingered there. She's changed, but something of her original life and character was. And Beric as well, we see he loses bits of himself each time, but something still lingers. So this is the theory that Qyburn seems to have been working on. And the zombie mountain, I think, is fascinating because clearly this is him taking the theory, and suddenly he's got all the resources and time to do something about that, and he creates the zombie mountain. So this is the prototype. This is the proof for him that his theory was right. So the question for the books is what happens next. Once he's proven his theory, what does he actually go off and do after that? Hashtag zombie army.
Well, something remains. That's kind of like with the ravens in the
Second Ravens Lines,
cave. Yeah. When Bran first tries the ravens out, he senses another person inside the raven that's been there before. So that person kind of remained, and Blood Raven calls it a shadow on the soul. And we have another example of that with Oral's eagle. So, but it seems like you can do something. You can kill those lingering souls, because Melisandre says Vermeer takes control of Oral's eagle. And Melisandre explodes the eagle and causes Vermeer to just like go crazy and lose control of some of his animals that he skin changes. So I think that could be whatever she did, if she did it, if she didn't lie about it, whatever she did could be a powerful weapon in the wars to come.
It also sets up an interesting thing where when you look at the White Walkers, whites, they clearly have no minds. They're basically puppets that they're walking around. They have no thoughts. They're just sort of going where they're ordered. But then you look at that, when you talk about second lives and the shadows on the souls, clearly you can bring back both body and mind, but weirdly separately. They can both linger on in their own way. And with Zombie Mountain, he kind of remembered who he was when he was fighting Sandor at the end of the season. But for most of the time, it didn't even seem like he was Gregor Clegane anymore. He was just a golem, basically, I would say.
I would agree, and I think there's a really important point about the Ice Whites, because the Ice Whites, as you say, they're puppets. I think that is not so much what we're talking about, the life after death thing.
Yeah.
That is the animation of a corpse, effectively, and that's kind of like the twisted dark ice version of what Bran does when he's walking into Hodor. He takes control over him and he moves him around. So I think that they're a different category to what we're talking about. That is animation, effectively.
George has included so many different weird categories of undeath. He's playing with it everywhere. And that's one of those things when you look back through the history and the a lot of the civilizations, a lot of them actually seem to be based around undeath. You look at the Undying of Karth. You look at Blood Raven. All these magical figures seem to be obsessed with extending their own lives or finding a way to come back themselves, which is especially what's going on with that blue heart. I never figured that out in Karth.
I don't know. It seems like it's their source of power, but they have a lot in common with the actual weirwood trees.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
That could be like another hour. Like, what do you want to do? Yeah. But no, yeah. I just think that they are kind of what Darl says they are, like husks of, what are they? The warlocks are I think at some point they lost their ability to contact the undying ones, and the undying ones may not even be real. They may just be like,
oh, it could be like a drug trip.
Like a shade of the evening trip.
Well, I do wonder whether again, we might be talking about two slightly different things here, which is we get the coming back from death thing, which we saw on the show with John. He's gone and then he's brought back. And then we get this kind of elongated or stretched life that we see with people like the Warlocks, with Blood Raven and Peter. And I think, although they might be sort of connected, I think they're different concepts of what we're looking at here.
Yeah.
And I think the stretching, the elongated life actually is a little bit about the something lingers, because it seems like you lose more and more of yourself all of these kind of characters with these long lives, they seem to lose a lot of themselves. Bloodraven certainly seems to be, there's not much of him left. The Warlocks didn't seem to have hugely rounded characters, shall we say. And so it's as if the longer you go, Melisandre's the same, the longer you go, the more hollow you feel.
Mm. So I wonder if it's a losing or a sacrificing, either physically or metaphorically, that the longer you remain living when you're not supposed to be living, or the more times you were brought back from death, that you were sacrificing part of your life essence and your identity in order to continue to live, or if there's an element too that other things could be sacrificed on your behalf, right? Whether they're Craster's sons or people watering the weirwood trees, or
that's right.
You know, Barrick giving up his life force for
Barrick, I think, is a direct example of that, where he says, where he comes back, he loses a bit of himself, he loses his memories. He asks if Thoros is his mother, which is not funny, but kind of is. It's such a weird question, looking at Thoros Amir and saying, like, you my mom? Not really a thing you should do, but yeah. And it's also, like John, he has no control over it. And I think that's one of the worst parts of the undeath that George has put in. Most of these people that are being brought back have no control over it. Gregor Clegane does not want to be what he is. Neither does Barrick, neither does John. But they're being ripped back into the world, which is a pretty horrifying thing to do.
Yeah. And the fascinating thing with Barrick is that the first time he came back seems to be unintentional. Now, most magic seems to have some kind of intention to it. You're wanting to do something. You're trying to bring this person back. That seemed to be purely accidental, as far as we can tell. When we get Thoros, he thought he was just doing their equivalent of the last rites. He was just like, you know, and now your soul go off and do whatever, and then suddenly he's come back. And it's like, so that, I think, is one of the biggest unexplained things in the story, as far as I'm concerned, is exactly what happened at that moment and why did he come back rather than anyone else who ever had the last rites.
You don't think it's because he was a good kisser?
I will be honest, I have not considered that possibility. But when we add that to your, are you my mummy? It gets a little bit weird.
I don't have anything to follow up with. I don't add anything to this conversation.
I agree from a mechanical perspective that it's an interesting question of why now? Why did this happen? Yeah, like how? And then if you're seeing it from a literary perspective that George is just setting up John being resurrected later via the same mechanism, okay, well, maybe that's why it just exists, because it's good for the plot. But then why is Lady Stoneheart necessary? Right. And obviously the show would disagree.
She died again.
That she's not necessary. But, you know, from a literary perspective, if that's why Barrick exists, is to demonstrate that this can happen, then why does it need to pass on to her?
Is she kind of a contrast to Barrick and John and how they kind of act when they get resurrected, do you think? Or how John relaxes?
Well, that's a question about, because a lot of people think that John is in, after Dance with Dragons, when he dies, that he's in Ghost, because he's a skin changer, which these other characters weren't. So that really changes what can happen when he dies. He can go into his wolf, much like Jojen and Bloodraven told Bran he could. When he dies, what was left of him would live on in Summer. So Ghost is right there. He could be right there. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of unclear if it'll be the same.
In the show.
Yeah, in the show.
Ghost kind of was like...
I got so excited about that.
It could be like that. But I just find it odd that George fought with Dan and Dave for Lady Stoneheart. And he specifically said it was Lady Stoneheart and Barrick were foreshadowing for John in an interview with Time. So John probably isn't going to be... John, he's not going to be the Jon Snow that I think that we think we know right now.
Mm.
He's not going to be season 8 Jon Snow.
No.
Sad Jon.
I mean, my take is, I think you were talking about a moment ago. So I think that Jon will walk into Ghost, and then for a period, his body will be put down in sort of the ice cells and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And then Melisandre is going to bring him back, but it's going to be a matter of bringing his soul back from Ghost and putting it into the body. So I think that sort of the way that George R. Martin is trying to show this is that this isn't just a pure firewhite situation with John. He's not just being brought back in the same way Beric was. He's actually, his again, showing symbolically his nature. He's survived because of the wolfy bit, the Starky bit, and the fire, the Targaryen-y bit of him. And so that's what's going on. He's got a sort of a double whammy of what's happening with the sort of the new unlife that he's going to be leading.
Robert, are you saying he's ice and fire?
Yes, I am.
What is going to happen to Ghost then? What, how's she going? Is Ghost going to die? Is that what you're saying?
No. No.
Pulling John from.
No, so there's if you've not read it, Robin Hobb's series, the Farseer series, Assassin's Apprentice, and so on. Apologies, I'm going to spoil it massively. So put your fingers in your ears if you want to read them. But what happens in there? And George R. R. Martin is a big fan. He's like written the thing, the blurb on the back for Robin Hobb and all the rest of it. So we know he's read it. We know, and it was written literally 1 year before he started on Song of Ice and Fire. In that, the main character, who's called Fitz, who is a bastard child, a child of prophecy, has what's called the Wit, which is effectively warging, has a connection with a wolf, and this character is killed and is buried, but his spirit goes into the wolf. And then what happens is that they then have to use magic to bring his wolf, his spirit, back from his wolf into his body. And I think that that is, for me, a clear inspiration for what is going to be happening with Jon Snow.
But the wolf is okay.
The wolf is okay.
That's a great thing. Is the wolf okay? And Melisandre basically saw that in the flames, in a Dance with Dragons, where she saw Jon becoming a
man,
a wolf,
or a wolf, and then a man again, or something like that.
See, you're so much smarter, Walda. You already know this.
I just memorize things.
It's true.
So, do you think Jon is gonna have to, like, lose less of himself if he's warged into ghosts and able to come back?
Yes, probably, but if you, what we know about how the warging thing, the skin changing thing works, is that if you're in there after your death, then slowly you also start to fade. So it really depends on how long he's out there for. He will lose a little bit of himself in there, but it will be a different type of resurrection to what we've seen with the others.
The exception, like, because he is ice and fire, or because of both of the bloodlines, perhaps maybe we're a little off, and John is the exception on that. Like, he does.
John is special.
Yeah.
Is John special? Is he really?
Do you think that his personality or soul will be changed because John was in him and taken out?
Yeah, that's something George has emphasized over and over again in the books. Yeah. Yeah. Especially some people, Bookshelf Stud, Maester Monthly co-host, really loves the idea that John's going to come back a lot more wolfish, a lot more vengeance filled, that he's going to give into a lot of his inner desires that he has, that he really suppresses when he thinks about Ned and being a Stark and his vows and all that stuff. But inside, he really wants to do some bad things and really give into a lot of desires. And if he's more primal, if he's more wolfish, then it's definitely on the table.
I was going to bring back to what you were saying about Beric and Lady Stoneheart, and how George is saying that it's really important to include her and going on with him going into this world. And he feels a lot of both of those things. But she's not just going to lose a little bit like Beric did. He's going to lose a significant amount of himself like Lady Stoneheart did, mixed with the wolf aspect going on.
Yeah.
He's going to be a very different character.
I think so.
I think you gotta comment back here.
I'm about that too, that Dr. Frey Bolton brought up earlier about that you get an extra life, you give away your identity, or you lose your identity. And that reminded me that the Phasis Men's deal is to give up all of their identity, you know, for their ability. So is it possible that the Phasis Men themselves are kind of quietly as part of these groups that have like extended lifespans?
Yes. Yeah. I think so, 100%.
Especially
100%. I think that part of the criteria for maybe being a faceless person is possibly being a warg or being able to skin change. And I don't think being a faceless assassin, when they change their face, I don't think it's just a mask. I think they're actually skin changing, because some of those Arya chapters, the Arya is feeling the girl's feeling when she puts on the skin.
It's almost as if something lingers.
Something lingers.
with raising John as a firefight, since we've never seen a warg's body resurrected, so like with Beric and Lady Stoneheart, their soul was somewhere and it was recalled to their body. But since John's soul is still technically present in the, we'll call it the material plane, or the nerds out there, if Melisandre raises his body, would it be more like an ice wipe? It's just like a husk of a body because his soul is lingering elsewhere until he chooses to come back. So Melisandre would like mess around the Night's Watch with husk.
Yeah.
Like a scarecrow, brother?
Yeah, that's one of those things that's I think it's gonna be interesting going to a Dance of Dragons. If he's actually in Ghost, who's gonna realize that? Is he like one of the things is Ghost is always silent. Maybe he actually starts howling or barking, and it's like, hey, that's kind of weird. And just kind of go from that.
Y'all were talking about the faceless men earlier and about how they could all be wards. I had a weird one. What if all the faceless men are actually women?
Possible.
Have you ever thought about that?
I haven't, but I would love it if they were.
And what if the kindly man was actually just an appearance because Arya is a girl and she shouldn't feel comfortable being where she's at, so she puts on appearance of like an older man to throw her off in some way and is actually a female.
That could be possible because the candles that they have burning in there, they burn specifically to you. So, like, if they were burning for me, they would smell like pizza because I love pizza. But Arya smells Winterfell and the Godswood. Like, the candles burn specifically. Whatever they put off, it's tricking your senses to smell what you love the most or what resonates with you the most.
In Egyptian history, with regards to the death, to kind of pull your thread a little bit about the types of death, do you wonder, so it's a multi-part question, do you wonder if it's a violent death, you were taken against your will, you may not be one, it may be harder to bring you back, so the connections don't quite fire, and maybe there's that husk to connection thing, but if you were someone who was an empath, where you were choosing to go from place to place, so if John was pulled due to his connection to his wolf, because they really pound that in the books, about how each of the Stark children and the way they're connected with their wolves. Could it be because Ghost is there to protect him? That his energy, if you will, was to know that this was happening. So when John was in danger, to be there to assist with that pull. So when Melisandre then comes back, because it wasn't a violent death, he has a conduit to go back. He will come back, but I think the wolfish nature in there because John was going to leave the Night's Watch to protect his family, but Aegon, Maester Aegon, reminded him of his duty. I think his duty will be there, but I think it will twist. So that's my thought. The difference between a violent death and the interference of the return, and then a willful death and being able to do the reconstitution.
I like that because Lady Stoneheart, arguably, she had the most violent death, and she's the worst.
She's the worst.
Yeah, yeah. Play that we have.
But Beric had so many violent deaths.
Yes.
Beric overall was like the most benign.
He's a very peaceful, really. Yeah, I mean, morose and not really kind of happy with what he is, but he's still kind of, you know.
He does have a willingness to come back, though, and that probably makes it easier for him to be resurrected, maybe, whereas Catelyn maybe didn't want to come back.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, so let's talk about Lady Stoneheart real quick, because why not? So I know, do you guys think that Lady Stoneheart's nature came about because of Kat's death and then resurrection? Like, do you think that her vengeance and her violent nature is because of that? Because I don't.
I think she always was.
I mean, I think that
shocker, Greg.
I think that snap, that turn from sort of, you know, not homicidal maniac to, like, you know, vengeance seeker happened before she was actually killed, like, during the Red Wedding. That's when she lost it.
Yeah.
And so when she was brought back, that was, like, her emotional state when mm-hmm. she – whereas Beric was out and he was sort of doing the king's justice. He was doing the right thing. He was on a crusade and he was killed and brought back. And so now he's like, I have to do the right thing and I have to uphold these ideals because nobody else is, right? Hmm. So does it have more to do with what their goal was at the time of their death than it does how they died or how they were brought back? Would John's then instinct when he is brought back be to continue to go to Winterfell to face Ramsay?
It could be. There's also something mentioned that Catelyn's body had been in the river for quite a few days that point. And I think there's something about the distance or the time between when they actually die, when they get back, and how much is lost. Because that, I think I think it's Thoreau says, like, she's too far gone. She's been too long in the river or something like that.
Yeah.
So that introduces an idea for maybe if she had come back right away, if somebody had run up and instantly made out with her and brought her back from the dead, which is what they do. But maybe.
Yeah. Using it, so, like, when Lady Stoneheart's in the river, she's in the river for a few days, right?
It's like 3 days.
Yeah.
For John, like, maybe that's why George is telling us about these ice cells and this, like, the contrast between, you know, preserving the body and John will, you know, still be most of John, you know what I mean? I think that might be kind of foreshadowing for that.
Preserving John while Catelyn was kind of, like, riding away. Exactly. Yeah.
So it's like a
could be. Yeah, that could be.
When Melisandre asks him what he saw, he says, nothing. And that could be because he was in
I like that.
Hmm.
Yeah. Well, I'm had a heart attack and died and was brought back to life.
By Melisandre? It
changed me, and I am bolder. I will talk to people now where I used to be reserved. Now, it's like, it just changes you.
That's a good, we can pivot from that because George has said, death should change you. So he had a gripe with the Lord of the Rings because
Gandalf came back so much awesomer.
So Gandalf came back
death
like
did change him.
Yeah, it made him better.
He changed clothes.
Gave him washed his clothes.
No.
Yeah. But it. Yeah. But so it should.
Secret to powers laundry. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Activated powers double.
Yeah, that's a big problem he has with other stories. A lot of times, characters that come back undead are just sometimes just better. Like they lose, they either gain abilities, it like opens their third eye in some sort of way, or they like lose parts of them that were holding them back. But George is very much not doing that. I don't think is there anybody that has come back from the undead. And it's like, wow, that was great. Good for them.
No, not in the story.
Yeah. He seems pretty pissed about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this idea, I love what you're saying about Lady Stoneheart, because it's something lingers, and that's the bit that you can sort mm-hmm. of pull back. But it's what is it that lingers? Which aspects of your personality? And it's, is it, and I don't have an answer to this, but I'm sure some people will, is it, as you're suggesting, the your emotional, mental state, whatever it was, the moment that you die, or was it the going back to the core of your personality that you just strip layers off? And I mean, I think my first attempt at it is something like, it's which bit of you wants to stay? That's the bit that's lingering. And so with Beric, the bit that's lingering with him is this kind of noble cause that he's there. That's the reason why he might want to stay. Lady Stoneheart wanted to stay because she wanted vengeance. And so the question with John, therefore, is what is it that will make him want to stay?
He doesn't want it.
Questions?
What's lingering around in the stone now?
Disease.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are they dead or are they alive?
Well, they do die at some point. They say it goes pretty quickly, and then it gets to your lungs, and then they basically just die.
Yeah.
Like your lungs turn to stony.
Yeah.
Can't breathe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I if anything, I would put that as yet another category, because that is that's the remnants of an ancient curse, effectively. That's magic has happened, and that this is something that's just sort of carried on. So they are sort of like slowly becoming, in the same way that we're talking about, you know, over time you become less you, that seems to be happening to them.
I've got a question kind of from the books about Mal. It is head supposedly read to in books. If do you believe it was his head that went to Don, and if it was, how did he function? Because that's where your nervous system's control is in your brain.
I don't think it was his head.
It was the dwarf, right?
One of the dwarfs.
Yeah.
One of the dwarfs that people were bringing Cersei, saying that they were Tyrion. It was one of those heads, and I think they served like cotton candy out of the skull.
Oh yeah, that's gross.
Yeah, but it wasn't his head. His head is. That's confirmed, right?
No.
It's heavily implied.
To me, it's canon. Take that for what you want. I think the mountain has his head.
Yeah, I don't think it makes a huge difference either way, personally.
I'm
getting a shock look from Gray here.
Wow, that was a look.
No, because we do not know the exact science through which Qyburn has reanimated Zombie Mountain, and because this is sort of riffing off of a theme from Frankenstein, then the idea has to be there that maybe some body parts have been replaced. So I don't mind too much about that, because we do not know if this is the soul rather than the brain that is lingering, then that's not consigned to the head. It could be you just need to have most of your body there for the soul to be remaining. So because we don't know the mechanics of this, I'm less bothered than perhaps others on the panel are.
But there's the quote about not being able to see anything inside the visor of the helm, which is where the question comes up of whether it's a head or not.
Yeah.
Wasn't when the head was sent to Dorne, wasn't it boiled into the skull?
Yeah, it was just the skull.
Yeah, that's convenient, because they can tar them. Kidding. Like, why not? Yeah.
They questioned when they arrived. We have no idea.
Right.
Yeah.
They just took the word.
I just had a terrifying thought. So when they sent Alistair Thorne to show the white hand, it's still animated, even though it was removed from the body. This horrible idea is to get if Robert Strong appeared at the head and Thorne's like, it's a neat trick.
And how do you keep the helm on if you go to my head?
Welding?
Yeah. Drive some nails into the shoulders, bolts. Whatever. He's undead.
Bolt on.
That's later.
No.
Maester Monthly Live panel.
Yeah. Do any of you have any thoughts about Resurrection, specifically about John, in light of how the show ended with him killing Danny, or anything?
Spoiler
about
alert.
Well, in terms of, is his character therefore changed, and that is what took him to that place? Is that what you mean?
Not necessarily.
Okay. I mean, I think that the fact is that his entire relationship with Danny in the books, whatever that turns out to be, will happen after his resurrection. So that's the only him that she will know, and so I don't think that fact will impact on what happens. I think the only thing is that he will be a darker character in the books, therefore it will feel slightly less jarring for him to be doing that, whereas on the show they're all him angsting about it and all the rest of it. I don't think there's going to be quite that degree of it going on in the books, because, and we will see his thoughts and we will understand that actually he is capable of a lot more.
They didn't think that far.
They didn't think that far. That's a good question.
She wasn't confident whether she could bring it. Yeah. She was like, I don't know. Other people have done it. She, you know, it might not have been her first thought. Dava,
was like, hey, maybe she can do it.
Doesn't Melisandre know that Beric is back?
So then
the
thing about
in
all
the
that,
show.
It would have to be special to come back because there's been plenty of people that died and plenty of people that can bring back. So is it the person that died or the special person or the person that brings back?
It's a good question where Melisandre and Thoros both struggle with that, especially Thoros. He's like, I didn't do anything. He doesn't think he does anything. He doesn't think he has any power. And it's sort of, it's the question of, is it the, well, we know it's like the White Walkers, their form of resurrection, kind of their puppeting thing is coming from them directly. But these other things, there's no magical figure we can see that's actually making this happen. Like, is it a magic spell? Where is that drawing its abilities from? Is there actually a Lord of Light just sort of going like, yeah, okay, you can come back from the dead. Who knows? It's one of those things that's kind of hard to parse with, especially with Firelights.
I mean, I would just add that there's a, except for that one time that I said that I still haven't got my head around Beric's first resurrection, but there's always an intentionality to it.
Mm.
And that implies that it's not the specialness of the person being resurrected, it's the intention of the person who's doing the resurrecting. So if they think somebody's worth bringing back, then that they do the thing. And so that's what's going on there. The other patch face is a completely different thing. Again, we don't really know what's going on there. I don't think he really knows what's going on there either.
Yeah, Patrice is odd.
Yeah, future books, do you think any other characters are going to die from that? Besides Charlie, any other currently dead characters that are coming back?
I've always hoped that they would find Ned's skull and, like, somehow bring him back. Like, just because, like, it seems like they can, like, with the Faceless Man and all these other things, like, they're seemingly able to animate, like, something around the skulls or the heads that's somehow important, or their faces or something like that. And Ned's bones are missing, and he knows all these secrets. I've always hoped that somebody would, like, somehow bring him back and get those out of him.
That's kind of...
It's a crazy idea, I know. It's just fun.
One of the only characters that we keep track of their bones.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean...
It is crazy.
I would count this among the Stark dead at Winterfell. I think his bones will make their way back up to Winterfell, and I think that we are going to see the dead Starks who have been locked in there for millennia. I think that we will see them en masse raised, not in the exact same way it happened on the show. I think they'll be raised on behalf of the living, so to speak.
You mean when they punch through stone?
Yeah. Yeah.
So the dead of Dunharrow.
Yes, yeah. So it's the Dead Men of Dunharrow, George R. R. Martin's version of it.
Gray area, you had a theory that there was magic in the crypts, like, you go down there, it's like the Weirwood Caves and everything.
Yes.
Now that Bran's been touched and the breath of magic around that first area is broken, maybe the crypts are now not safe either. You think it was all...
That's a good question. I think the crypts are still magic in the books. I still think they have a protection. They're still like an ancient sacred tree town from centuries ago that was made into crypts. But I do think if that touch was to break the magic on the cave, that it would do the same for the crypts. Or even if he maybe accessed the weirwood above it because the roots are all... It's like all connected. But then again, there's the thought that all of the Weirwood cave systems are connected. So maybe if you break the magic in one, you break the magic in all of them.
It raises a question too. So Bran is aware that that mark broke the seal on the cave. If it breaks other ones, then is he doing it on purpose? Evil Bran?
Evil Bran? No, Bran's not evil. He's the chosen one.
We've got about
five more minutes.
So if any more
questions?
I have a question that's kind of related.
Sure.
Craster's wives and daughters. They just vanished into the north somewhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
Think they're looking for their ice babies?
I don't think they'll make it.
I think they know.
Yeah. They probably know they can't get them back.
Yeah.
Do you think Bran masterminded? Like, do you think he wanted to be the king? Do you think that was his intention?
In the show?
Once he got the history downloaded.
In the show, it got a little confusing, but I was really shocked. I'll just say, like, I was shocked that Bran became king. But if you actually think about it, okay, Bran's going to become king, and then you go back and reread some things, it seems like Bloodraven made a mistake years ago not to become the king himself and to become Hand. So that mistake they're trying to fix through Bran, and a lot of what Bloodraven and the Tales of Duncan Egg is foreshadowing, definitely for Bran. And I don't think he necessarily desires to be king. Like we were talking about, is it his desire to do this thing or is it a sacrifice? I think it's a sacrifice to be ruler of Westeros. I mean, look at all of the people that have died ruling Westeros. So yeah, sacrifice. And I don't think he's malicious about it. Thank you.
You know, George R. R. Martin has said that that Gary and Laystone Heart are foreshadowing for Jon. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's possible? I know that everyone thinks Melisandre is going to be the one to bring him back. Is it possible that Laystone Heart could give the kids the way that Barrett did with her?
I would love it. Yeah, I would love it.
I would, but logistically, she's hundreds of miles away. So she's down in the Riverlands, and Jon. Right up the wall. So,
yeah, but he's in a fridge.
He is in a fridge, but...
Melisandre's the closest.
Yeah, she is.
Then Bloodraven. Bran.
Oh, yeah. That's one of those things that I always would like if Lady Stoneheart did that as sort of a redemption for her treatment of Jon when he was younger, if she brought him back and gave him new life.
I disagree that she does not need that redemption in her story. And if you're interested in that, you can come to our Cat Did Nothing Wrong panel at noon.
Wait a minute, we got to extend this panel a little longer. Let's talk about Catelyn.
I would argue with Lady Stoneheart that she is now all about the vengeance because of the wrongs that she's seen happen to her family.
Yeah.
And so her arc now starts again at the creation of Lady Stoneheart, and it ends when she feels that the vengeance has happened and all is set right, which means that I personally think that she's going to take on Arya's bit from the show and taking out the phrase, and I think that she will then find, actually, you know what, Sansa and Arya are still alive. And at this point, she's going to actually suddenly lose her need to be alive still. And that, I think, is the end of her arc.
Or someone will choose to end her.
Yeah.
Saying that we don't need vengeance anymore.
Exactly, yeah.
Or Arya.
Forgets that Melisandre knew Jon was going to die at the beginning of the Dance of Dragons. So she's been planning for this for a while. Is she going to be the one to bring it back?
I think she's probably going to be the one to bring it back.
I mean, if Beric's the foreshadowing, then Thoros is probably foreshadowing for Melisandre.
Yeah.
Daggers in the dark, right?
Yeah.
Daggers in the dark. So we got 2 minutes. And this panel went by really fast.
Do you need your favorite quick tinfoil ears?
Sure. Don't start with me, please.
Don't start with me either.
Joe, this is your panel. We started
This is
you.
My panel. Actually, it's kind of related to this, that Whisper Jewels video I made, where the idea that in his other works, Martin has taken, he really likes the idea of putting souls in crystals, and like he does it sometimes in sci-fi, sometimes he does it in fantasy, and that's kind of showed up in A Song of Ice and Fire, especially, well, actually on the show with Benjen, where they said they shoved the obsidian in his heart. It's like, how does that work? And it's kind of this idea that also works with like the faceless men and how, like, why do those faces still have memories in them? It's this idea that throughout A Song of Ice and Fire, all these people, like, weirdly with rocks and all these other things, it's like these souls are being stored in physical objects. And it's not something that comes up a lot. It tends to explain a lot if you apply it. But it's like, to do it, you have to read his other books and assume he's still doing the same thing, which he doesn't. He changes mechanics. Yeah, kind of like Horcruxes. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's my favorite one.
The Whisper Jewel?
Yeah.
I think that one of the things we haven't talked about this is the way that there are lots of symbolic life after death, some people being resurrected. Mm-hmm. There's a huge amount of characters that we think are dead but actually aren't dead. And for me, my connected to that, my favorite tinfoil is Howland Reed and Ashara Dane had a baby, Mira. And that's my personal favorite. And so she's. Got a round of applause for that. Nice. And she is now currently living in the neck.
Yeah. My favorite theory is that Melisandre is a green seer, that she was taken from Hardhome a long, 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 many, many years, years beyond count, and by slavers, taken across the narrow sea, sold at Lot 7, real name Melanie, and her power's more stronger at the wall because she's closer to the Weirwoods. And she's actually a green seer. She has red eyes like the ghost of High Heart. She has these traits of a green seer. She's seeing Blood Raven in her visions. Yeah, that's my favorite.
Cool.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
With Virgil.
With Virgil. Great likes that one. Right. Well, because we watched Night Flyers. Oof, that was a rough watch.
Put our review out.
Yeah.
Night Flyers.
So it's, I guess, kind of bland as far as tinfoil goes, but look up the Ashford Tourney theory. It's that the people that are Sansa's suitors match up with the houses of people who win at the historic tourney of Ashford. And so, like, it basically foreshadows that Sansa will be involved with, either betrothed to, married to, a Targaryen at the end.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
So Jon Snow.
Or Aegon.
Aegon,
the other Aegon.
Aegon,
so. Yeah.
Looks like we are about out of time. Do you guys want to tell people where they can find you on the internets and all that stuff? Robert?
In Deep Geek, on various places.
There you go.
Gray area, all the various places.
And your podcast with Quinn.
Oh, yeah, and I have a podcast, a reread podcast. We're going chapter by chapter. It's called Obsidian Nights, and it's with Quinn from Ideas of Ice and Fire, and we just did Daenerys 1, and she's still my queen.
So I'm Fat Walda on the Reddit, RASIOF, and also on Twitter, and then featured on Maester Monthly occasionally podcast.
We'll be doing a live recording of that later today in the main stage around 1.
1 something, yeah.
We should probably know that. Yeah. And of course, I'm Joe Magician. Find me on YouTube channel, youtube.com/Joe Magician, and Maester Monthly as well, and Watchers on the Wall, where I write for them. So thanks for coming, everybody.
Thanks for coming. Thank you. I have bookmarks for you if you want one.
Wow, we have merch.